The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Boker Tov, good morning. Anthony, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavuot Tov. The Chagim are officially over, apparently. That's it. Done and dusted. And on to a new era in this whole sort of corona lockdown thing. We'll talk a little bit about that. But I was just fascinated, just a very quick comment. I was fascinated at an article that I read, which said that the International Atomic Energy Agency chief has commented that Iran doesn't have enough uranium for one bomb at this stage. So I'm not quite sure whether he's trying to say, well, what are you all worrying about because they don't even have enough for one bomb? Or is this his way of saying they're actually building a bomb and they are accumulating? Yeah, I mean,
they're on their way, but they're not quite there.
Two sides to the story. Yeah. Why are you worrying because they haven't got anything that could be of any danger to anybody yet? And so I was just fascinated by the way that this comment was reported. Clearly, he said, without any doubt, that they are undertaking activities that they did not sign up to. This is Rafael Grossi, who's the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency. So they are clearly contravening the agreement that was reached. But they're not there yet, apparently, according to what he thinks.
Which means that we can also, the rest of us can breathe a sigh of relief. Anthony, the story that I definitely want to talk to you about is thousands of residents had to be evacuated from their homes on Friday due to fires caused by extremely hot weather. Where were the fires?
This was just madness. All of a sudden, from nowhere, a super hot day in the high 30s, early 40s. The fires were spread really across Israel. One very, very significant fire in the area of Kfar Ha'oranim, which is not far from the Modi'in area. Homes were burnt down. More than 5,000 people all across Israel had to be evacuated from their homes, not only in the areas around Modi'in, but also further north, some Arab villages as well. Were ones that were affected, El Kutuf and near to Khadera. Also Kfar Kara and Al-Arar were all affected, with residents having to be evacuated from their homes. And then in the North Galil area, also people were instructed to evacuate their homes. It was just like a blitz. All of a sudden on Friday, very, very hot weather indeed. Roads were closed, homes were burned down, people were evacuated, so quite serious. Fortunately, all the fires were finally controlled in time for the weekend, in time for Shabbat, and in time for Simchat Torah. Of course, in Israel, only one day of Chag, Simchat Torah, which fell together with Shemini Atzeret on Shabbat. So we were already back to work yesterday. But unfortunately for these people involved in the fires, not such fun. They're having to pick up a lot of the pieces. Properties not only were burnt down, some of them were damaged. Some people were slightly hurt, inhaling smoke. Paramedics were on the scene to treat people. So quite a serious, sudden fire blitz across Israel. But fortunately, the weather's cooled down a little now. So I'm guessing that all of that is now under control.
Okay, well, hopefully. Now that the holidaying or the holiday time is over, children are due to return to school. So is the lockdown likely to be lifted, Anthony, to allow schools to return, or what's the plan going forward?
So many fascinating stories around COVID, and I know we've heard enough about it, but there are some really fascinating stories. First of all, just to the main question, no school now. And the question is whether there'll even be school next week. At the moment, only those schools that are considered to be for children at risk are the ones that are open. The rest are all closed. And the question is whether even kindergartens and primary schools might open next week. I know there's a lot of pushing from various quarters to get things open, but apparently there are certain measures, and the measures are that apparently we need to reduce down to less than 2,000 new infections every day, even though yesterday there were something like only 1,600, but that's due to a lower level of testing that occurs over the weekends. Currently, the estimate is that we're around about 3,000 new infections a day, which is significantly down from where we were previously, but not quite down to that 2,000 level. And the R, which is the reinfection rate, is supposed to come down below 1. At the moment, that's not the case. So it doesn't look to me as if those schools will reopen next week. But we'll have to wait until the corona, probably tomorrow, to make some decisions or at least to give an idea of what's going to be happening. But for example, Rabbi Kanievsky, the leading Haredi rabbi who himself has been suffering from quite severe bout of corona, 92 years old, yesterday decided to announce that the Haredi schooling system should be reopened as usual, and then apparently regretted the statement and went back on his word. But in the meantime, a lot of people took that to mean the schools should open. And so as far as I'm aware, a lot of the Haredi schools will be reopening today as a result of his pronouncement yesterday, which afterwards was actually cancelled. But I don't know that the cancellation got around as quickly as the original word got around. Also, a fascinating story on TV, which is worth just mentioning very briefly, is that apparently there's kind of a medical system within a system whereby a lot of the ultra-Orthodox sufferers of corona are being treated in their homes by private doctors and nurses that are not part of the overall medical system in Israel. Now, on the one hand, people are using that to say that really what they're doing is lifting the burden from the medical system, and that these people who are being treated at home are really helping the hospital system because they are not overburdening it to the extent that, you know, it would make it almost impossible for them to get proper treatment. And we understand that the number of seriously ill people who would be on the list, you know, of Israel's seriously ill coronavirus sufferers, number around about 170 within the system who are being treated at home. They don't appear on any lists. They don't even come into the system. They don't appear anywhere. They are completely under the radar. And yet this is going on in people's homes. What I find quite fascinating about the whole ultra-Orthodox community infection system, because we know that the infections within the ultra-Orthodox community have been way, way higher than across the rest of the population. And yet we find that the deaths per population within the ultra-Orthodox community are not higher than the general population. And so the question is, why is that? How come that so many of them are becoming infected and passing it on one to the other almost without regard, going to parties and getting together for Simchat Beit HaShoeva, for Sukkot, and celebrating Simchat Torah as if though nothing has happened? And yet their death rate doesn't seem to be higher than other sectors of the population. And I think that part of that is to do with the fact that, as a general rule, they're a younger community. They don't have as many, on a per population basis, as many older people as the rest of the sector, the rest of the population has. So that's one of the reasons why it has been said that the deaths per population within the ultra-Orthodox community are not higher. But I'm not sure that that's the only reason. And I'm just thinking to myself and fascinated as to why the statistics are skewed in this way. Just one more thing before we get off corona is that there's been a lot of talk about a new 30-second coronavirus test that has been developed between India and Israel in conjunction organizations in the two countries, a lot of work being done in India itself. And apparently this 30-second test is due to be shipped out pretty soon. Samples already, large samples being used in India. Not that India is such a great example of how to conduct a coronavirus necessarily, but apparently this is something that you'll be able to breathe into a tube and within 30 seconds get the result already produced. So we'll be watching out to see that.
Interesting. Okay. And very sad news to end off today's, stories, Anthony. The oldest man in Israel. Tell us about him.
A fascinating story about Shlomo Suleiman, 117 years old, passed away yesterday. Not only is he considered to be the oldest Israeli ever, but he's actually one of the oldest people in the world ever. I'm not exactly sure where he features on the list of the world's oldest people, but I do know that the current oldest person in the world is verified as a Japanese resident who's apparently aged 117 years and 283 days. So he's almost up to his 118th birthday. But Shlomo Suleiman couldn't really be verified because he didn't have proper documents to prove his age. But according to his members of his family, he was 117 years old, born in 1903. He was actually born in Yemen, came to Israel with four of his six children. Two children ultimately were born in Israel after he made Aliyah to Israel. And he had, they say, dozens of grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren. There was no attempt to really have a count of all of them. But he came to Israel in 1949. He worked in agriculture, apparently used to walk distances backwards and forwards to work, even until his old age. His wife died when she was only 94 years old, so not so long ago. But apparently since then, he's continued to go to shul every single day. And the children and grandchildren say that the secret to his longevity would be his eating of very, very small portions and just remaining very active, in the sense that he used to walk these distances, walk to shul. He was considered very learned at the shul that he attended. And that apparently eating small portions was all of was the whole secret to his longevity. So we mourn the passing of Shlomo Suleiman. Apparently, even at the age of 116, he was going to shul and back every day, walking on his own, and also walking fair distances. There was a report about him walking a fair distance, carrying a bag of oranges on his back around in Netanya where he lived. And so fascinating story and nice secret to survival.
Okay.
Apparently eat a little and walk a lot.
All right. Anthony, that's where we leave it. You know, they do say that you only as old, a man is only as old as the woman he feels. And, you know, he did marry somebody who was 23 years younger than himself. So maybe that had something to do with it too. Anyway, we will catch up with Anthony Reich tomorrow morning at 7:45. If you want to find out what else he has to say, go and check out his blog. It's called Comments from the Edge.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.